Good morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. We are simulcasting on PCTV, Channel 1301, Spectrum Cable, and we're also on 89.7 FM, WTBR. I'm honored, and I mean this sincerely. I kid around with a lot of people, but I am really honored and privileged today to have with me someone I've known for a very long time. His name is Congressman Richard Neal. He's been in Congress a long time, but he's never forgot where he came from. And that's Springfield, Mass, and the famous Irish section. And good morning, Congressman Neal.
Good morning, Bill. Great to be with you.
Great to be here with you, too. Listen, anything going on in Washington?
No, not much these days. You know, just everything's calm.
Yeah.
Everybody gets along. Everybody's happy.
Kumbaya every morning. They sit
every
around
morning.
With hands. But, you know, we have to be careful now because we have an Irishman and the head of the speaker now. So we got to be careful.
Well, I think that the description I've used of the selection for Speaker of the House was that if you were not in a coma for the last 3.5 weeks, you would have known who was responsible for this fiasco. And that's just what it was, a fiasco.
Yes, and I hope the people of their districts will remember that.
Well, I think that one of the challenges you have is that we've now come up with a Speaker of the House who really has been formless over the course of his career, in the sense that it was very difficult for us to figure out what he was for, what he was against at the time, largely because none of us knew who he was, and you didn't see much of him.
Yeah.
And I think that they had, after they voted to oust Kevin McCarthy,
another fine Irishman.
Yeah, I think that the problem was that McCarthy had actually made a deal with us that was a reasonable one, and that was to keep the government open.
Yeah.
After we had reached an agreement on the debt ceiling, two very responsible positions, the difficulty was that there's a rump group in the Republican Party now that is far outside the mainstream of American political thought.
Mm-hmm.
This is no more an argument about what happens between the 245-yard lines, if I might use the football metaphor.
Yeah, sure.
But instead, it's a fringe group that's probably on their own 20-yard line and unlikely to get to their own 25 because they have these far-right positions on not only funding the government, but on many of the challenging cultural issues of our day.
You're so right when you say, in my opinion, and let me just do this so we both. The views and opinions expressed on this program are mine and those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, Pittsfield School Committee, Mayor Tyre and the Mayor's Office, Peter Marchetti, and the City Council. I agree. I agree. I would call them renegades, rebels, whatever. But they're rebels. I think what they demonstrated, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, they went ahead and pushed this thing to get rid of McCarthy with no other plan, just to get rid of McCarthy.
That's exactly right. There were six of them that voted to oust him, and they came up with this peculiar rule. And rulemaking inside of a legislative body is a widely accepted practice, reinforced by the Supreme Court many times.
Yeah.
But the rulemaking that they adopted in the 118th Congress was that one person could bring about a motion to vacate the chair.
Yeah.
Now, this is very ill-considered policy because if you can't find one person out of 435 that's upset with the Speaker of the House that particular day, you're missing something.
Yeah.
Generally, people are upset with the Speaker of the House, even if it's of their own party. And I think in this case with McCarthy, by acceding to their wishes, or their demands, I should say, or their extortion, he jeopardized his own career when he should have drawn the line early on and fought them.
Yeah.
So I said to a member not long ago, within the last couple of weeks, I said I thought that one of the first things they should do is to change that rule.
Absolutely.
And he said to me, well, that takes away my leverage. Well, a legislative body generally functions by everybody having to give up something to get to a greater goal. And that's what negotiations are about. And I think in the case of McCarthy, his willfully, time and again, conceding to their demands only made them more
powerful,
difficult to deal with.
Right. Oh, I concur. And
so they, even in the day of his departure, when they brought the motion to vacate the chair, it was only six of them.
Yeah.
And then when they decided to try to find a replacement, as they moved to Jim Jordan, they figured out with Jordan that 20 of their party voted against them. And on the next ballot, 22 voted against them. And on the next ballot, 23 voted against them.
Yeah.
And I think that that number was only about to head more north. And as they decided to vacate the chair with McCarthy, they couldn't find a suitable replacement. And then they proceeded to come up with Representative Tom Emmer from Minnesota, a likable enough fellow. I'd describe him as a principled conservative, but he did two things that they objected to. He voted to accept the result of the 2020 presidential election, which proclaimed that Joe Biden had won by 4 points, incidentally. And then he voted to codify gay marriage. And for a group on the Republican side, that's too far outside the norms.
Yeah.
So that rule that they had about challenging the chair with one dissenter, coupled with six who then would vote with all 212 Democrats, meant that McCarthy was out, Emmer was out, Jordan was out. And they settled on Johnson, who, again, I bet if I've seen him in the hallway five times during these last 7 years, that would be something. And if anything, we might exchange a wave. That's it. Nobody really knows him on the Republican side, never mind on the Democratic side.
Wow. Well, it certainly it makes for great TV.
If you're an insomniac.
Yeah. I'm back to watching the Big Bang Theory more often now. Repeats. We're in a mess, the world, you know. I went to church this morning, and the priest prayed for peace in the whole world. And he was very sincere about it. And I have to tell you, too, I'm disappointed with Democrats that are so anti-Jewish. I'm sorry. The Polish princess and I, we went to Poland, and we went in and, I don't want to say toured, we visited Auschwitz and Buchenwald.
Yeah.
And I don't care what kind of a human being you are. If you walk through those, I will tell you, and you probably have, so you know that you can't ever forget them. And it's scary.
It's a grim reminder of inhumanity. And I have been to both. And I've also been to Yad Vashem in Israel.
Yeah.
Which memorializes the 6 million Jews who were gassed and tortured and, as Hitler described it, eliminated.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the turmoil that we're facing now in the Middle East is that Israel has a right to defend itself. And by subscribing to the international rules of warfare,
right.
I think that President Biden has outlined a path, a corridor that would be constructed so that the innocent might proceed to Egypt, perhaps.
Yes.
I think the president in recent days has suggested time and again that he wanted a response that dealt with Hamas, but did not inflict damage or harm on innocent people. I think that that's a reasonable position. But I don't see how you can move away from, at this moment, not pursuing Hamas. If they are to regroup, if they are to be allowed to keep their weaponry, and right now, by the way, they're hoarding food and they're hoarding oil and gas and weaponry.
Right.
And water from the people of Gaza. So I'm very sensitive to the president's position.
Yeah.
I also think he has said, as the Democratic conventions have said, that in the end, we need to pursue a two-state solution.
But it has to be the people, not Hamas.
That's exactly right. And it has to be an agreed upon security issue for Israel as well.
Right.
I mean, part of the Hezbollah and part of the Hamas effort almost on a weekly basis has been to lob missiles into Israel.
Yeah.
So I think that the moment that we find ourselves in, we need, along with our allies in Europe, to continue to stand by Israel, again, within the framework of the international order of rules of war.
Right. And what we see, and you're level-headed, you've been there, you've been through more than one financing of wars, and you're a student of history, like I'm nowhere near comparing myself with you, but I try to be. And it's beyond a point now of talking. You've gone in, you've massacred, you burned babies, you've cut their heads off, you've cut them out of cut the baby out of a mother's stomach, shot the baby, shot the mother. That's not warfare. That's just pure butchery.
That's unimaginable evil, as the president has described.
Yeah.
And I think that the president also, with his visit, he reminded people, as you did earlier, of the establishment of the Israeli nation. President Truman recognized it first in 1948.
Yeah.
And our security in that part of the world, in some measures, linked to Israel. They have been steadfast allies of ours. We've been making great progress in the rest of the Middle East with many of the other nations there. We certainly keep relations close to home, but there is no doubt that Hamas, which is the governing body that kicked out the Palestinian Authority in Gaza, that they act every day in a very cruel and, in my judgment, unambiguous, threatening manner.
You couldn't be right. You couldn't be more right. And, you know, many years ago when I first got into radio, right after Marconi invented it, as my people I interviewed a Jewish man, a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful man, who was a machine gunner in World War II that came up on the concentration camps. And I'll tell you, 50 years later, he filled up emotionally. So for those people who have, would say, nothing better to do on college campuses and other places, you better read a little bit and learn a little bit of history.
Sure. Well, anti-Semitism is on the march across the globe, as recently as what happened in Russia just days ago.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the threats to Jewish students at Cornell University and other places should not go unchallenged. I also think that we need to be very clear about, we don't want attacks on Muslim students either, or that horrific crime where that man murdered that child. I think we should all be outraged by what we're witnessing.
Yes.
But clearly, there has been a new march of anti-Semitism across the world. And we need to reclaim the civility of reminding people that that is unacceptable.
I was on the telephone last night with a good Jewish friend of mine, and we were discussing all of this and security measures, and I won't get into all of that, but what they were saying, and it's so true, the old adage, you probably hit, if we don't learn history, it's bound to repeat itself.
It does repeat itself.
And what's happening? And again, the poor people of Israel and what they're going through, and now it's spread. Here's what bugged me the most. I'll be honest with you, Congressman. This Fordham, the Jewish kids in the law school at Fordham. I watched a girl this morning. They're afraid.
Yeah.
And well, I'm like you. There's got to be some recompense for some of these people.
Well, I thought that anti-Semitism after the end of World War II had been in earnest decline.
Me
And there
too.
was substantial evidence about it, only to see it rear its head in the time in which we live. Look, let's be frank about something. You can criticize Israel and not be anti-Semitic.
Absolutely.
But you can't criticize Jewry and have people say that you're not offensive, because you are.
100%. 100%. And again, to, you know, where are the people of faith? Where are the leaders, the faith leaders of all faiths?
Yeah.
Why aren't they speaking up? I mean, and again, but I just hope and pray that it doesn't get any worse. You know, I did a show, believe it or not, this is only because I had just read an article on the spread of anti-Semitism. I had the lady from the Jewish Federation maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I was astonished to find out it was growing here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. We have to, people like us, and I like to throw myself in with you, you know, I got computers behind me and you got frames of awards, but that's okay. I go to tag sales. I got a wall like that. I go to tag sales and I buy the people's, like a guy won an award for being the best engineer in GE. I buy that. I hang it on my wall. Who knows? But we have to stand up. And
I'm hoping also that this package that we're, I think, going to vote on in the next few days, if not next couple of weeks, this package that has been proposed to aid Israel, to aid Ukraine, to aid Taiwan, and to secure the southern border should be packaged as one. And I think that there's an acknowledgement here that Ukraine needs our assistance. The Ukrainians have fought valiantly.
Yes, they have. No question about it.
And everybody at the time when Putin marched his army to the borders after Crimea and then on to Ukraine, people said, this will be over in days. Well, we're 2 years into it, and the Ukrainians have not relinquished their strong position. So Putin's argument that there's no such thing as Ukraine is ridiculous. And the threat from Taiwan and the South China Seas is something we have to remind ourselves of. And Republicans who have said that they want border security, I want border security, that we be able to package all of these. I'm surprised, Bill, by the following, that when it comes to Ukraine and Russia, Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr., they staked their careers on opposing Russian expansion.
Absolutely.
I mean, this dated to the post-World War II period from Truman on. It was an accepted principle of bipartisanship that we would oppose Russian expansionism. And whether it was in Czechoslovakia or Hungary, as they revolted, we acknowledged the yearning of people to desire to be free. I can tell you that there is no evidence in the Baltic states or amongst Russia's immediate neighbors to have a greater Russian presence.
Yeah.
They do not want to see an expanded, enlarged Russian nation. And Putin has been punitive and a dictator in the way that he has treated the Ukrainian people.
Yeah. Yeah. And look at it. If it were up to him, he'd be in Poland.
Exactly right.
He'd be in Poland. And I have to tell you, being in Poland, they love their freedom, and you will appreciate this. We were talking to a Polish lady, and she said, and she was just as sincere as the day was long. She said, "We only have two enemies in the world," and you know, I of course bought right in, you know, walked the older guy in. I said, "Who are they?" She said, "Russia and Germany." And if you then all the history that I've known pops back in my little head and said, "Well, of course, dummy," but they still view Russia as an enemy.
I consider one of the highlights of my career having been to Poland just when the Berlin Wall came down and the Soviet Union
collapsed.
And part of it was I met Walesa, who changed the course of history by jumping over that fence in the Gdansk shipyard on a Friday afternoon.
Yes, he did.
It transformed the world, that courage. I met Cardinal Glynn. I knew some of the intellectuals. And people forget that that moment that was seismic was when the Russians and some of General Jaruzelski's army, they killed a young priest named Jerzy Papashushko.
Yeah.
And they threw his body by the wayside. And that so ignited the Polish people that they were after Jaruzelski, who was a puppet for the Russian state. The Poles are a successful people in Poland, and they're a successful people in the world because of that determination. There's a large Polish constituency that I would have in the Indian Orchard,
yeah,
Ludlow, Wilbraham area, and then into southern Worcester County in places like Southbridge, Uxbridge, a large number of Poles and a number of Polish veterans clubs. Yeah. And you are absolutely right. They have no desire to be part of a Russian empire.
None. And where in that whole area there?
Exactly right.
My Palmer. Sister lives there. Palmer, where the yeah. White Falcons? But the world again. It's almost like pre-Nazi Germany. It's almost if you. I'm thinking back about how now people are staking their, you know, Mussolini in Italy, and you know he was staking his claims, and the Japanese were staking their claims, and I hope that we, as the leader of the free world, and I think we will. There's don't take an offense at this, please, because you know there's extremes in both parties.
Yeah, there certainly are,
and I just hope the moderates in both parties stick together and say, no, we're not going down that road. That's the road to doomsday.
Couldn't agree more. And I think that there is a certain reality to the arithmetic of the House of Representatives and to the U.S. Senate. And the following is accurate. Republicans have a 4-seat majority in the House of Representatives.
Yeah.
That's a numerical majority. It's not a governing majority.
Exactly.
And Democrats have a 2-seat advantage in the Senate with what is known as a filibuster. They also have a principle, which we're all trying to figure out how it works, called the hold.
Yeah.
And they have a 6-year term. So in the Senate, the idea that you're going to do anything with just one party is not going to happen. And Joe Biden's got a big veto pen. So yeah. You would think that good sense would bring us to some conclusions that might point us in the direction of solving some problems for the American people. I think that that small majority that we had, we actually got things done. And I think part of it was, whether you agreed or didn't agree with Nancy Pelosi, she was not going to be toppled as the Democratic Speaker of the House. She had broad support in the Democratic Party, almost to the person, because they saw her as fair-minded and principled. I thought her visit to Taiwan was remarkable. And I talked to her last Thursday night. I was at an event. The two of us were reminiscing about some of the big things that we got done, including the rescue package, the American Rescue Package, the infrastructure bill, the multi-employer pension plan legislation. How about the CARES Act? How about the CHIPS Act? How about the Postal Reform Act that has kept the post office alive? The Ways and Means Committee was in the middle of all of those.
Yeah.
And I authored with my colleagues on the Democratic side much of that legislation. So I think that we need to remind ourselves what we were able to do with a small governing majority. But on two of those pieces of legislation, we actually had some Republican help. And on the CARES Act, we had almost total Republican help.
And I, in a very selfish way, I want to personally thank you, the president, and all the members of Congress who voted for the PAC Act.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Good reminder.
No, and I know the VA is struggling, and that's, listen, No one could have predicted, I don't believe, the impact of the PAC Act. But that said, it's helping so many of us. Just get the help in the medicines and everything we need. I asked Jack, oh, by the way, this is my No Shave November beard 2 days into it. Because last year I did it. My brother has prostate cancer. My cousin died of it. My father, no one knew I was doing it until the third week of November. So I started 2 days early. But going back, so many of us are benefiting from that, and I want veterans to thank you and all the Congress who voted for it and President Biden who signed it.
It's great legislation.
It really was. And some of my friends in the VA are saying, but we're a little, we're really not overwhelmed, but we're very taxed. And everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. You can't have guys from, I've been home from Vietnam for 54 years. So think about it, you know, or 53 years. So just think about it. And it's been that long. I don't want to go any further with this. I can't thank you enough.
Well, we're coming up on Veterans Day, and your service should be acknowledged, and we're very grateful for it. The Vietnam veterans, they did their part.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, we made it better for those in the Afghan and Iraqi people. I had an Iraq veteran come up and give me a hug, and he said, thank you for making our coming home a real coming home.
Yeah, good point.
You know, so other than that, what else you been doing in Washington?
Well, I think much of our time has been riveted on the speaker selection. I think that the Middle Eastern issue, Ukraine, has caught our attention. But I also think that the government shutdown is looming again, and it ought not to be tolerated. There's no need of it.
No.
And our Republican colleagues, I can assure you of this, Bill, they know one thing. They got blamed for it when they shut the government down with Bill Clinton. They got blamed for it when they shut the government down with Barack Obama. And they got blamed for it when Donald Trump shut the government down. And they know that. And if you talk to them privately, they're very earnest and very sincere. But they have, as I said, a handful, up to maybe 20 people, who would be okay with shutting the government down, because they want to prove a point. They don't want to solve a policy.
You're dead on. We have to take just 1 minute, Congressman. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial, simulcasting on channel 13. This is, and I say this, and I mean it from my heart, this is Congressman Richard Neal. He has done so much for all of the country, but more specifically, Berkshire County, Springfield, Western Mass. He's always up at the plate swinging the bat for us. And we need to remember that for all of the people who do this and all the politicians. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon here on WTBR FM.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sandrini.com.
The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
And now back to the Morning Drive with Bill Sturgeon on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
I'm glad you're home. That's a nut house place down there now.
Yeah, back tomorrow, and it's not a. I don't think it's going to become more. I know there's going to be more lucidity. Let's put it that way.
Congressman, I don't know how you do it. I have friends there that they're retired. They still live. Some are still. One guy said to me, you know, I used to love to go to work. He said, now I go to work grudgingly.
Yeah.
He said, it's not fun anymore. It used to be. When I was there, yeah, there were the wing nuts, but they were the minority.
Well, part of the problem is that the public in elections now for more than two decades, they've bought this notion that if you only elect the outsider.
Yeah.
Do you know the one that stands on the outside to talk about how they're so principled that they can never stake out a position that might find an agreement because somehow that would be treated as treasonous. Wow. Well, the problem is that that argument is what contributes to the stalemate in Congress.
Yeah.
The other part of it now is the social media phenomenon where you can develop your own persona for cable or for social media posts.
Yeah.
And you can make yourself sound more honorable. But what you're really doing, Bill, is you're embracing performance as opposed to substance. And the performative side of politics now is dismaying for many of us who actually like the give and take of legislating.
Yeah.
And could find agreement with our Republican colleagues. But again, this notion that if you just stay outside of the system after you've been elected, by the way, to join the system,
right,
that you are more honorable than somebody who wants to negotiate with you. It's preposterous.
Boy, you thank you for that. I'm gonna can I leave that on? Because I can have them cut
sure.
it out.
All right. No, don't cut it out.
All right. But anyhow, the piece is we go forward, you know, I think back, you just made an interesting point a couple of times, and I want to go back to it. Our famous senator, Senator Edward Kennedy, I am going to butcher this. You can correct it. But I think he said something like this. It's better to have a part of to compromise to be legislative. And yep. You do it all the time. You've done it for all your time. And I'm going to say it's better to have part of the pie than none of the pie.
And, well, Ted Kennedy, you know, his memoir, which was very instructive, and he was a really good friend of mine, and he was a well-acknowledged, capable legislator by Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
In his memoir, he's very candid about the idea that when he was very young and in Congress, that as he took up the cause of health insurance, that Richard Nixon offered him the mandate for universal coverage.
Right.
And Kennedy says in the memoir, I was young, I was full of myself, and I turned him down.
Yeah.
He said it was one of the worst mistakes I ever made.
Yeah.
And sometimes the memoir and the rearview mirror allows us to be more candid. And in Kennedy's case, he points out, if I had accepted Nixon's offer as honorable and sincere, you would have to buy health insurance, but then you would have universal coverage. Much the same as we do with automobile insurance and homeowners insurance and, you know, in Massachusetts. Yeah. It's just a good idea because the whole idea of insurance is to share risk. But I thought to your point that you've well made, that Kennedy says, look, I made this mistake, and for decades, we made no advances on health insurance because I wouldn't accept a reasonable deal.
Yeah. No, you're right. And again, the point you just made, too, is so cool. People elect you to go there and do things. Ready for this? This is unique to some of these people. For them. For them. Not for you. You know? Yeah. And it's earth-shattering. When I interview people like for local stuff or state stuff, they say, well, I'm going to cut taxes. No, you're not. You're one vote.
Right.
You're one vote. And the other piece they don't always see, Congressman, you do because you've lived it. If you cut on a local, you were the mayor of Springfield. If you cut taxes, if you cut the fire department's budget, you've just cut services.
You take an engine out of service and that threatens lives.
Right, right, right. And in a Pittsfield, we can have a fire truck, no matter where you live, with trained EMTs on it, at your anywhere within 6 minutes. So what do you want, 20 minutes? Sometimes so, I think some of these outsiders drive me nuts with their malarkey. Is me
Irish? Well, when I hear some people say, well, we can cut Social Security, one of the things that I remind people of is that the average Social Security benefit is just under $19,000 a year. Average.
Yeah.
That's about $420 a week.
Yeah.
And my point on that is nobody's getting rich on Social Security, but if you're using 19,000 or 18,500 as the average, that means half the people that are receiving Social Security are receiving less than that.
Right. Right.
And I think that's often missed. You know, when I hear about, I'm going to reform Social Security. Well, how are you going to reform it? By doing what? I mean, tell me what you're going to do with it. Then we'll figure out if what you're saying is accurate or not. But if people say they're going to cut Medicare, they're going to cut Social Security, they're going to cut Medicaid, they're better off being able to say they're going to do it and not try to do it, because the politics work for them on both ends.
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. I used to have a colleague in Texas, God rest his soul, and he had all these Texas sayings. I'm sure you know Texans and their sayings. And he had the one, he used to say, Bill, what is it, LD? Bill, that poor soul is so dumb, it's like ignorance gone to seed. And sometimes when you have to just be pulling, I don't have any hair, but if I just listen to them and I go, what are they saying?
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think that they get a lot of people get away, as you described it accurately. They're going to do this, they're going to do that. And the truth is that they're unlikely to get it done unless they have a lot of help. And the only way you get it, a lot of help, is to figure out what the path forward is. I always say this, hope is not a plan.
Yeah. But I have to say this too, to the audience, to the viewers and the listeners. Congressman Neal was the chairperson of the Ways and Means Committee when the Democrats ran the House. Congressman Neal, and we're going to just recap again, brought some wonderful bills that helped us all, ARPA and everything, all of these things. But he did it by collaborating with Republicans. By legislating, I know it's a unique word now for Washington, legislating, but you would try it when you go back. Maybe it'll work again. I don't know. I wouldn't bet the ranch, but seriously, and I mean that from my heart. Where are the Ted Kennedys? Where are the Richard Neals? Where are the Republicans? Where are they that were there? Sil Conti, all of these folks.
I always consider it an honor. We've talked about it in the past. Yes. I served with Sil Conti.
I know
very well. And he was a character who was very effective. And, you know, he liked to have a cigar and he had that great toss of hair.
Yeah.
He liked a little bourbon on the side or a little glass of red wine. And he loved Italian food. But yeah. I got to tell you, he was well regarded in Congress by both parties.
Yes. And, I get to see him. He's right across the way from my my in-law's grave up there. And it's a tribute to him. But, you know, when I was a kid, my mom and dad, Democrats through and through and through, but worked as a family. We worked for Conti.
Yeah.
A Republican. But my father used to say he's a Republican. He's a Democrat in Republican clothing or something.
Yeah.
Something like that. But he served the people. That's what I think is lost with some of your colleagues.
It would have been very hard for Silvio Conti in the modern Republican Party in the House. I think that he held a lot of traditional views. Of that, there is no question. But he also took some pretty vigorous positions, as you know, that would have been contrary to what Republicans today would think. I'm dismayed by the idea that the Republicans in the House have moved really toward a more libertarian position. They've moved far right. And I think that Trump's hold on the Republican Party in terms of endorsing a primary opponent for many of them, it keeps them at bay. I think they're reluctant, reticent, you name it, about doing anything that Trump would find offensive to him.
Yeah.
By the way, that loyalty is one way. That's not two-way loyalty. And I think that even as we watched with dismay at what happened with the speaker selection, Trump was not necessarily able to elect the speaker, but he was able to defeat two candidates for speaker. Yeah. And my problem with that is that for him, it's always about him.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just have one more topic we have to talk about, because I will tell you, I've been to a few places over the past 2 weeks, and that we got to get some kind of border security.
Yes, we do.
And I know you believe in it, and you said that, but boy, I mean, when you read the breakdown of who's coming now, Chinese, Afghans, how are we going to get that done?
We need to know who's in the country.
Yeah,
that's a national security issue, and I think that more border security. The trade-off is a path to citizenship. Excellent. And after you go through the system, because one of the challenges we have today is that we need immigration. Our population is not growing. They, for the most part, work pretty hard. And they've located in the meatpacking houses of the Midwest.
Yeah.
They've transformed parts of the country.
Yes.
But recently I was in New York and I walked by the Roosevelt Hotel. That's a tragedy in Midtown Manhattan. I think Governor Healey is correct. She's saying we can have a big heart, but you need a big wallet to have a big heart.
There's no question about it.
And I also think on the national security front, you've got to know who's coming across that border. So people who have gone through the process, as is annually an occurrence here in the courthouse, just downstairs to my left, they have gone through a process.
Yes.
Not unlike my grandparents.
Or mine.
They knew who was coming into the country, and you had to go through a process, whether it was at Ellis Island or Philadelphia or wherever, and you had to understand that as part of that process, that if you were going to be in, you had to be in with both feet.
Yeah, and boy, you're saying what so many people here want to hear, because I've been to play, and you know, I usually try not to talk politics when I'm outside, because it can get sticky. But all kidding aside, people now at the point of saying, wait a minute, how many million people and how many million gotaways? We don't even know who they are, where they are. And, you know, I'm an old criminal justice guy, operative word, they're old. I fear, and you nailed it, Congressman, you nailed it. It's now a national security issue, and it has to be addressed. And for people to say, well, the border's secure, well, I have to do, you don't have to watch any of the crazy stations, just watch the normal stations and the. So I'm happy to hear that. I'm so happy to, but I knew you would. I don't know why I'm happy. I know you would have been behind it.
Well, the other part of it people forget is that a lot of these immigrants or these individuals who have come over the border, they by buying false identity cards, they end up paying into Social Security, they end up paying into Medicare.
Yes,
and they're never going to receive the benefit.
No.
So now it's up to $10 billion a year they provide to the Social Security Trust Fund. And because they have to live in the shadows, where they are, by the way, treated violently in some circles. Okay. Because the victimizers know that the victims can never go to the police if they're here and they're undocumented.
Nailed it.
And I think that's an important consideration. I always know if I'm in Boston or I'm in New York and whether or not the cab driver is documented, because if they're undocumented, they stop for stop signs and they stop for red lights. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you're beautiful. That's exactly right. But going back just for a moment to Governor Healey, you know, now this state has done, I think, more to welcome immigrants. Now they can have driver's licenses, but now she's realized, and God love her, we don't have the money. I mean,
she says there are 7,000 families now that have come to Massachusetts. And you were to look just beyond where I am with you right now, over across the Connecticut River, the West Springfield, the motels have hundreds of people that are staying there.
Yeah.
It's a difficult way to try to raise children in a motel room. And the children play in the parking lots. You can see that in outside of Boston, that the governor is correct about what's happened in places like Lowell.
Yeah.
And all she's saying is, look, we want to do our share, but we can't afford to do more than our share.
Right. And, you know, a real Bill story, Bill and the Polish Princess, we were down to go to Mass General Brigham 2 weeks ago, and a good portion of our Holiday Inn that we were staying had immigrant families living in it.
Yeah, now, that's what happened.
It's almost tragic. And you're right, they were playing in the parking lot. They, a family in a hotel room, not a suite, a hotel room.
There's an excellent piece, Bill, and I know you're a very big reader. There's an excellent piece yesterday in the New York Times, or was it yesterday or Sunday in the New York Times, about what these smugglers do and how they promise the undocumented everything, and they point them in the direction. And then once they arrive in a place like New York City, or they arrive in a place like Boston or Springfield or Worcester in the Berkshires, the problem is that there's also in New York City, the argument the smugglers make, you're going to have a free accommodation.
Yeah.
You're going to get plenty of food and you're going to be able to start a new life. I understand all of that. But New York has already spent $2 billion on this. And Maura Healey, I think, is correct. All she's saying is this is a national problem. We need a national solution.
And don't you agree with that? I agree with
that. I do. Yes, I do.
Because they're in Massachusetts, but they're also in North Dakota.
That's right.
I mean, I just hope that we get some. I say this to no offense to anyone. Comrades have to start to prevail on both Israel. Comrades have to prevail on the Ukraine. But also comrades, people like, if I may compliment you, like people who are solution-oriented, which I believe you've proven it. I'm not saying something people don't know. With the border. And let's put the partisan stuff aside. Put CNN and Fox and news aside and just go to work and solve some of the problems for us, the people.
Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush agreed with Democrats on immigration.
Yes, they did.
Build a system that will accommodate a wave of immigration, but also we need to know who they are. Yeah. That's a reasonable path forward.
I don't think any people or politicians, except for the extremes, that's all they want to know. Yeah. They want to know who you are and why do you want to come. And we can't take, that right now we do need people, but we can't take everybody.
No.
And I just... You know, having you on, and I don't want to blow smoke, but having you on is refreshing because people are frustrated. You and you have to know it. Your office is, they're swinging the bat every day in there trying to handle people's problems and stuff. And I do want to thank you, take time. Our friend Dick Stockwell did pass away. Oh. But I want to thank your office for all they tried to do, and they did it. Unfortunately, his disease progressed much more quickly than any of us know.
We've got a great staff here, and they're very, very effective. And I'll tell you, they put everything into it. And what they did during COVID was extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, they came to work every day. They made sure that those businesses stayed open. They made sure that there was money in the pockets of people who needed it. The small business loans, what we were able to do with making sure that people had sustenance every day. My staffers were in this office on Saturdays and Sundays, and they worked it, and I was out there with them. We traveled across the Berkshires. I'll never forget in those late winter days. It was pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Well, you had a good guide, though, Gene DeLea. I mean, he's
the best.
He, don't tell him that, please. But he really is. But seriously, I don't want to hold you up. I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
I always appreciate these chats. And I will be honest and tell you, I get so many, and I hope your office does, positive feedback about what we discuss and about your how earnest and transparent and how much integrity you have. And thank I put a gold, remember the nuns, I'll put a gold star on your forehead. I never got any, but I'm sure you did. I got rulers on the top.
I can confess, Bill, if you just keep it between you and me, I didn't get many pluses either.
Congressman Neal, may you have a long and happy life. Thank you. And I mean this from everybody. Thank you everything that you do for us. You're of the, and don't take the offense of this, of the old breed of politician who got elected to go and do stuff.
And ready got things this? Done.
Yeah, got things done. And here, you ready for this? For the people.
For the people.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
You're the best. And tell Jack, when I call him again, I'm going to have a beer just like his.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye
well.
Now.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
You're the best. All right, folks, we got a few announcements. And I want to also say, too, that as we go through these announcements, so many things are coming up. December the 9th, which is just, believe it or not, around the corner, they're going to be the Shindy, which is just a marvelous event, Holiday Shindy. And that's going to take place September the 9th in the Common Room. It's the Lutheran Church. It's going to be just a fun time. And I really like the Shindy. It's one of my favorites to go to. St. Joseph's Church Bazaar is coming up very quickly now. November the 1st, you know, there. And now we're into November. And this bazaar will be Saturday, St. Joseph's Church, Saturday, November the 18th, 9 to 1 at the Parish Center. They will be having raffles. They will be having knitted items. They'll have a bake table, cookies and fudge, crafts and jewelry. And as always, anything you can do to help support the churches, that is really, in my opinion, very good. The other piece too, I did want to bring out to some folks is that pretty soon the holidays will be upon us. And their holidays, they are Judeo-Christian holidays, and they're close together. And I guess I'm going to ask that hopefully by the time we get there, a lot of this anti-Semitic hatred and violence has ceased. I want to make my position clear. I support Israel and what they're doing. And I would hope and pray, and I mean both hope and pray, that this violence and anti-Semitic behavior and violence and hatred passes by. We can't afford it in this country right now. We've got to come together. And it's just the way it has to be. We can't be at odds with each other. We can't be hating each other and hurting each other. It's just not the American way. Do the best you can for everybody. God bless. And remember, take care of somebody today. Please. These are bad, difficult times. And people need to be built up. And if you have a Jewish friend, or an Arab friend, or an Irish friend, or Catholic friend, or a Protestant friend, Hindu friend, Islam, catch up with them. Let them know you're there for them. Believe me, I just had a wonderful visit over this past weekend from friends that I worked with in the Philippines 10 years ago. And we've maintained contact with each other. And it was so wonderful just to be able to know they were there. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank Congressman Neal, who is always, as I say, he's at the plate, swinging the bat all the time. And he's swinging the bat for us. Once again, God bless. Take care of each other. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. And God bless America. And God bless our veterans.